would call Mr. Hayden's case and Ms. Martin's case, the Tisdale case. And Mr. Hayden, do you wish to reserve, sir?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay, very, very good. You've been a busy attorney this week, haven't you?
May it please the court, my name is Charles Hayden and I represent Traer Tisdale. He entered a conditional plea of guilty to one count of first degree murder as well as other counts. The issue here is with the one count, the murder count, for which he received a life sentence with no time suspended. Prior to the entry of the guilty plea, there had been a motion in limine filed by the defense counsel seeking to present evidence of intoxication in an effort to reduce the first degree down to second degree and show that he was so intoxicated as to be incapable of forming the ability to premeditate and deliberate these actions. The court refused to grant that request and said you can't present any evidence regarding intoxication because that he's charged in this case with lying in wait, murder by lying in wait, and we don't have the element of premeditation and deliberation or willfulness as a part of that offense. I would respectfully submit that ruling was an error because I'm unaware of any Virginia Supreme Court case or Court of Appeals case holding that there's a type of murder of first degree where a person cannot become so greatly intoxicated as to be unable to deliberate and premeditate. I'm unaware of any case that holding that intoxication may not be admitted in a case alleging murder by weight or any case indicating that Virginia case indicating intoxication evidence is inadmissible to negate the intent requisite for first-degree murder, including lying by weight. In fact, I cited the cases of the Giartana case and the also the Hatcher case and the 1923 Johnson case. It's cases that said a person... A person who voluntarily has become so intoxicated as to be unable to deliberate and premeditate cannot commit any class of murder that's defined as willful, deliberate, or premeditated killing. In the Hatcher case, and specifically the Virginia Supreme Court in 1978 said, when a man has become so greatly intoxicated as not to be able to deliberate and premeditate, he cannot commit the murder of the first degree. And so this line of weight is clearly a murder of the first degree. That case flatly says that a person can become so intoxicated as not to be able to commit a murder of the first degree. Now, the Attorney General properly noted that there's these very ancient cases from the 19th century that suggest that you can have unintentional murder by lying in wait. They cited the cases the 1829 case of Commonwealth versus Jones and the 1875 case of Howell versus Commonwealth that said in those cases that actual intention to kill would not necessarily constitute an ingredient of the offense as it's no part of its definition. They state that and the legislature has declared that the perpetrator shall be guilty of murder in the first degree without further proof that death was the ultimate result, which was the will, deliberation, and premeditation of the party accused. And which is, to me, a very bizarre kind of ruling that they're suggesting that you can unintentionally and properly be convicted of murder by lying in wait, murder by poison, murder by starvation, murder by imprisonment, accidentally. So if I accidentally lock somebody in a cold storage unit, not realizing the person's there, and he dies by murder by imprisonment or murder by starvation, It's murder. It's not. They're just saying here that we only have homicide. That's the way they're treating that language. It doesn't have to be an intentional, bizarre holding, I would submit. Same way, murder by poison. Well, if accidentally pour the hydrochloric acid into the soup vat instead of water, mistaking it, by their definition, all they have to show is homicide. Well, there's no element of intent if it's accidentally.
Mr. Hayden, or is it that they have to show the intent to poison or the intent to lie in wait, and then if the murder happens after you lie in wait, because lying in wait is sort of inherently dangerous because of what might happen when people lie in wait for each other.
But if you look at what those cases say, they say it doesn't have to be intentional. If it's just simply a murder by poison, whether accidental or intentional or unintentional, it's murder by lying in wait. And they're treating murder as being synonymous with homicide, when really, if they had properly understood the meaning of murder, it carries with it implicitly the notion that it's an intentional act with malice aforethought. By common law, it's defined malice aforethought. What's malice aforethought? It's when you do something with the intent to kill somebody or to seriously injure somebody. If you have the necessary intent to seriously injure somebody, but then it results in killing, the person dies within a year and one day afterwards, it's still malice aforethought. That's what it meant traditionally, common law. I got to looking last night on the internet trying to figure out where did this the Virginia statutory definition distinctions between first and second degree murder arise, and it's amazing what you can find on the internet. I learned the origin of our Virginia statute and 23 other states that adopted this murders in first degree, murder in second degree, originated with the Pennsylvania Statute Act of 1794 that was really promoted by Dr. Benjamin Rush and James Wilson, and persons that are forgotten by history today, but very famous persons then, and were best buds with people like Thomas Jefferson and people like that. The purpose of enacting the degree of murder thing was they were trying to reduce the types of, you know, at that time all murders were punished with death penalty. They wanted to figure out ways to reduce, not make all murders necessarily result in death penalty. So they created in the Pennsylvania statute this murder in the second degree, and in 1794, and that was adopted. And it's interesting to note how that Pennsylvania statute read. I actually found this from a law review case from 1954 in the Stanford Law Review, Volume 6, Number 2, pages 345 through 358, lying in wait murder. They noted that the Pennsylvania statute, when it was enacted, said that, quote, that all murder which shall be perpetrated by means of poison or by lying in wait or by any other kind of willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing shall be deemed murder of the first degree. So they were making clear in that statute, the Pennsylvania statute, was that murder by lying in wait or murder by poison is a type of murder example of a murder that's willful, deliberate, and premeditated. They use the term not all murder by lying in wait or by any other kind of willful, deliberate, premeditated killing. So they're making clear that they're just citing murder by lying in wait as an example of a just for the 18th century law, so you can understand what we're talking about. We're talking about the particular, to give you a couple of examples of egregious, heinous forms of murder by that's willful, deliberate, and premeditated, is murder by lying in wait, murder by poison. And the Virginia legislature adopted this same statute, along with 23 other states. We added the words also murder by imprisonment and murder by starving. That was a sort of a Virginia adoption. Other states adopted this California Law Review article noted that California, for example, adopted murder by torture was an example there. But when Virginia, though, we enacted our statute, we proceeded to simply state murder by poison, lying in wait, imprisonment, starving, or by any willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing is murder of the first degree, punishable as a Class II felony. But our General Assembly's adoption of this statute, it doesn't make clear in its recitation that those earlier enumerated things were just simply to be examples of types of murder that is willful, deliberate, and premeditated. It just appears to be two different classes, or at least that's the way it was interpreted in those two 19th century cases cited. It's just two entirely separate classes that are unrelated. And that's just wrong. When you look at the history of the origin of this statute, it was intended to implicitly carry with it the notion of premeditated and deliberate. And certainly the more recent cases, the Giordano case, the Johnson case, the Hatcher case, understand the implicitness of all first-degree murder has to be intentional. And so I would simply say that the 19th century cases that are cited, they're just bad law. They're confused. They were confused about a lot of things in 1829, slavery among them. And so I would submit it just simply is the rational, the proper thing is would have been to allow the defendant in this case to present the evidence of intoxication just as he should be, as the Giordano or the Hatcher case says he should be able to do in any case involving a murder of the first degree. So, therefore, I submit the trial court erred in this case, and there should be a new trial ordered where he's allowed to present that evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden.
Good morning. May it please the court. Kathleen Martin for the Commonwealth. The trial court did not abuse its discretion in this case in not allowing the evidence of intoxication to be admissible because, as was argued at trial, the charge for first-degree murder here was lying in wait, and that is a separate category from willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing. And the case law talks about how intoxication evidence may be used in a premeditated killing to reduce the charge from first degree to second degree murder. But there, since we do have these separate categories, if this is not a charge of premeditated murder where we would be, that's a different element of proof, the evidence of intoxication was not relevant as the trial court held. I would point out that while the defendant may say that these old cases decided in the 1800s or the judges were confused or whatever, they are still cases from the Virginia Supreme Court, and they have not, to my knowledge, been overruled. So they are still in effect. And I would note that in the Jones case, the defendant shot the victim, and he argued that the language about premeditation and deliberate killing only applied to the enumerated crimes of poison, lying in wait, imprisonment, starving. And at that point, the statute also talked about any kind of willful and excessive whipping, beating, or other cruel torture, which language has been taken out. But in the statute that was analyzed in Jones, after they listed these enumerated things, and then they said, or by any other kind of willful, deliberate, or premeditated killing. And so that was the basis for his argument that premeditation only applies to these other things, and it doesn't apply to me, and since I shot the guy and it's not one of these other things, I'm not guilty, was basically what he said. And the court disagreed with that and talked about these three categories. Now, the statute that we have now has taken out the other language, and it just says lying in wait, poisonment, imprisonment, starving, or by any willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing. So they've taken out the word other. And also in some of these old cases, there was some discussion, and I don't remember whether it's in Jones and Howell or one of the other older cases, where there was a lot of discussion about the choice of language that the legislature used as to whether they said any other kind of premeditated killing or whether they should have said such other kind of premeditated killing and what those two words might have meant in interpreting how all of these things were applied in terms of the deliberate and premeditated part compared to the enumerated parts of poison, lying in wait, etc. And the court determined that if the court had wanted all of these things to be treated together, they would have used a different language than they did. And so for almost 200 years, we have had these three separate categories of first-degree murder, the enumerated crimes, the premeditated killing, and the felony murder. And so certainly, since we do have these three different kinds of categories, and the case law talks about how if it is one of these enumerated things, you do not have to talk about, there's no proof necessary for deliberate or premeditated killing. I cited in my brief a North Carolina case from 2015, State v. Grullion. In that case, the defendant arranged to meet with the victim, and they were going to rob him. So they lured him to a place, and the defendant was hiding under the steps. And then when the victim came, the defendant jumped out with his gun, and the victim got shot and died. And so in that case, the court said that the presence or absence of premeditation and deliberation was irrelevant because the murder was accomplished by lying in wait, and the defendant had admitted that, yes, he intended to rob this guy, and he did it by hiding under the steps. And here, this defendant told the police that he had hidden in the woods, and he waited for the victim to drive into her driveway, and then he popped out and walked up to her car and shot her five times. So certainly the elements of lying in wait are clearly there. There's no need, as the trial court found, to look at these other things about premeditation, and so that's why the court found that the evidence was not admissible. Certainly it's not relevant. It was not an abuse of discretion for the court to hold that. I also call the court's attention to the Welch case, which is an unpublished case. And in that case, the defendant starved her baby to death. And when it was first heard, there was a question about whether or not there was premeditation involved, and then on rehearing, the panel determined that we don't need to go there because the jury had been instructed on both starvation and premeditation, and since clearly the evidence showed starvation, that was sufficient, and we didn't need the other proof. So all of those cases support the trial court's ruling in this case. I cited some other cases in my brief.
Ms. Martin, how do you respond to Mr. Hayden's argument that this is really just a homicide issue and that you don't have to show any intent if this is the argument that presumably, I guess, you don't need to show malice, and malice has to be.
Well, I think none of the cases really talk about malice. None of these old cases really talk about that. I think there's malice, and I think that...
Is it malice understood, or is it just not a part of the equation?
I think it's just understood that there has to be malice, and I think that the intent is maybe that you intend to have some harm come to the victim. It's not a total accidental thing, where, for example, if you just reach for the wrong container off the shelf and pour poison into somebody's coffee, but you just, it was an accident. That's a totally different kind of situation than if
what
you say...
What is the intent here, then? Is the intent to just lie in wait?
And so the intent is that he lies in wait, he hides, he waits, and he watches, and then he ambushes the victim. Now, he may or may not have intended that she be killed. He may have just intended that when he jumps out with his gun, you know, she's going to throw herself at his feet and say, oh, I'm so sorry, I've offended you. And so I think that it's not a question of no intent at all. It's more the intent to have this, to act with the deadly purpose. And that's discussed some in the North Carolina case. And so while you know, we have this language in Jones and Howell where they talk about these three categories. You know, in neither one of those cases had anything to do with the death by lying in wait. You know, one the victim was shot and the other one the victim was hit in the head with an axe. So they were, I don't know of any cases in Virginia where there was actually, the death was by lying in wait and that was what the conviction was. But I do think that we have to look at, you know, the issue here is admissibility of the evidence. And, you know, if the court wanted to say, well, it's first-degree murder, it should come in, and it's intoxication, it should come in because it's first-degree murder, you know, ultimately that might be a holding that the Supreme Court could make. But I don't think this court can make it because you can't get around these really old cases. And I don't think they've ever been overruled, so they're still on the books and they're still law. So, you know, ultimately we might reach a different decision here in terms of whether this evidence truly is relevant. But under the facts of this case, as it exists right now, the trial court was correct in its ruling. And if there are no other questions, that concludes my argument. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In that Stanford Law Review case I found from 1954, they actually cited, they were noting that at the time of the passage of the act, there were various cases that initially interpreted lying in wait is requiring it that it be intentional. And they actually cited a Virginia case. It's a very early Virginia case. I'm going to try to give the cite to it. I found it cited in the Wolf versus Commonwealth Capital murder case here a few years ago, but it's the only place I could find it cited. I was unable to find it, the actual case itself. But in the Law Review article, they noted that there were cases that there are statements in other cases which lend substantial weight to the result or that support the Pennsylvania view that this Pennsylvania case that intent is to kill is necessary to sustain a conviction of first-degree murder by lying in wait. And they cited the case of Burgess versus Commonwealth, a Virginia case, and the site for it is 2 Virginia CAS, C-A-S, 483, and then at page 488, an 1825 case. Now, when I found it in the Wolf case, the Virginia Supreme Court case here recently, Wolf versus Commonwealth, they cited it as being for Virginia, and then parentheses 2 Virginia CAS. What the Virginia Supreme Court said in this 1825 case, it was discussing lying in wait, the meaning of lying in wait. It said, quote, "Now we take the expression lying in wait not merely to mean his concealing himself in the path of his intended victim for the purpose of killing them, but the deliberately and premeditatedly seeking an occasion to effect that deadly purpose," unquote. So what they're saying is, in this early, that precedes any of the other 19th century cases, the Virginia Supreme Court said, well, it carries with it this murder by lying in wait, implicitly the notion that the killing is done deliberately and premeditatedly, with seeking an occasion to effect the deadly purpose of killing the person they're lying in wait for. So, but then the Virginia legislature got, or the they have these confused cases that subsequently follow. But this case has never been overruled either. So, I would submit there's a conflict between these different 19th century cases. This court can proceed to note the conflict and proceed to clarify the law to specify that even in the case of murder by lying in wait, it implicitly carries with it the requirement of murder by premeditation and deliberation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden.